And I spend a lot of time talking to them about everything that happened. I knew something was going on with Nico, but somehow this went under my radar. I thought there was something wrong with his brain and that it was all because of my faulty genes. But in reality, it was all Jonathan Lowell's fault.
"Will Dad come home soon?"
Nico asks me hopefully as we eat dinner together. I've made macaroni with butter on it. I didn't even have the bandwidth to add cheese. "I hope so," is my honest answer.
"But he didn't do anything wrong,"
Ada says in a tiny voice.
"Why does he have to be in jail?"
"Because you can't just tell the police you didn't do it and they let you go," I explain to them. "But don't worry, because he has an amazing lawyer. He'll be home soon." If I tell myself that enough times, maybe it will come true. After dinner, I pop some popcorn in the microwave. Miraculously, I manage not to burn it like last time, and I get the kids set up on the sofa watching cartoons and eating microwaved popcorn. Right after I turn on a movie, my phone rings. The number comes from the local police station. I jump off the couch and jam my thumb into the green button to take the call. I make it into the kitchen when that familiar Italian accent comes on the other line.
"Mili."
I almost burst into tears.
"Enzo, oh my God, I can't believe they let you call."
"I have 5 minutes, that is all."
5 minutes isn't nearly long enough to say everything I have to say, but it's a start.
"You idiot! Why did you confess?"
"For Ada,"
he says in a quiet voice, like he's worried they might be listening.
"I would do anything for her and Nico. Wouldn't you?"
"Yes," I admit, "I would."
"For you too, Mili."
That's all it takes. My eyes are welling up.
"We need you back here, though. Please. She's not going to get in trouble for this. She's only 11.
"Mili, she slit his throat with a pocket knife. This is trouble for her."
That's the part of it that tugs at me. Jonathan Lowell had 2 stab wounds. Ada stabbed him in the belly to get him out of the way. But there's no way she is tall enough to effectively cut a grown man's throat while he was standing in front of her. She didn't tell me every detail, only that she stabbed him to get him out of the way. And I didn't want to push her because she was already so upset. So I can only imagine what must have really happened. I found Jonathan in the living room rather than in the hidden room, so the knife in his belly must not have immediately taken him down. He must have tried to follow her, then collapsed soon after. And then she turned around and sliced his throat while he was lying on the floor, just to make absolutely sure he was dead. That's cold, even for me. And yet, if she truly believed he hurt Nico and he was coming after her, she did what she had to do. It's still hard to argue something like that could be self-defense. "It doesn't matter," I say. "Enzo, we need you home. We're lost without you. Please tell the truth and let Cecilia handle it."
"I will not turn my daughter in.
No, never."
I hate how stubborn he is,
but given the opportunity, I would do the same. "Did you confess to the police?" I ask him.
"Not yet," he says.
"Cecilia would not allow me. But tomorrow..."
"Please don't do this," I beg him.
"I know you think you're helping Ada,
but she's not going to be better off with her father in prison. That will wreck her life. Don't you realize that? You need to come home, and then we will figure out a way to deal with this.
A voice is shouting at him in the background. He has used up his 5 minutes.
Mili, he says urgently, please tell the kids that I love them, no matter what happens.
We love you too, I start to say,
but I'm pretty sure I get cut off after the first word. The line is dead. Tonight, Enzo will spend the night in a cold, uncomfortable holding cell. Actually, it's the summer, so it will be a hot, uncomfortable holding cell. Maybe after a night of that, he'll realize he does not want to do this for the rest of his life. At least, that's what I have to hope for.
76. I barely sleep that night. Enzo might be the one spending the night in a cell, but I'm the one tossing and turning. I keep thinking back to when I was in prison. I was surrounded by people, but I felt so lonely all the time. I always felt like I didn't belong there. I don't think anybody feels they belong there. I wish Enzo understood how awful it is. He might not be so quick to give up his life. I decide to send the kids off to school the next morning, just to maintain some semblance of normalcy. I walk them to the bus stop, and I'm not surprised to see Janice there with Spencer on his usual leash. Janice sniffs.
I'm surprised to see you here.
I live right over there, I point out. Why wouldn't I be here? Janice doesn't find me even the tiniest bit amusing.
I mean, after the terrible thing your husband did, aren't you ashamed to show your face?
I can't believe she said that right in front of my children. I've been taking a lot of her crap since I moved here, just to keep the peace. But I am done with that. After all, I'm fairly sure that no matter what, we're not going to be living here much longer. My husband didn't do anything, Janice, I say. You got it all wrong. She snorts.
I don't think so. A man who looks like that is always going to be trouble.
She thinks my husband is a murderer because he's too handsome? Enzo is a good man, I say firmly, and I don't need some busybody neighbor to tell me otherwise. So why don't you mind your own damn business from now on, Janice? Janice's mouth falls open, like she's not quite used to being spoken to that way. I look over at the kids, and for the first time since their father was arrested, I detect the tiniest hint of smiles on their faces. Once my kids are safely on the bus, I return to my house. I reach the front lawn just as that familiar black Dodge Charger pulls up to the curb. The driver's side window rolls down, and Detective Benito Ramirez sticks his head out.
Millie, he says, get in the car.
I trust Ramirez more than I trust any other cop in the world, but I still am not excited to get in a cop car without any explanation. I have to get to Enzo's bail hearing in less than 2 hours.
We need to talk,
he says in a grave voice. What about?
Millie, will you get in the car? Pretty please. Come on, you want to get back in time for the bail hearing, right?
Oh, what the hell. 77. You know about Ada, I assume?
I say to Ramirez as we sit together in the front seat of his Dodge.
I do,
he says.
Cecilia told me everything.
She killed Jonathan Lowell, I say, even though part of me still can't believe it. How could my little girl have slit a man's throat?
Sounds like that pervert deserved it.
Still, he shrugs.
Like mother, like daughter.
I flinch. Ada does not know anything about my history. Maybe she would feel better if I told her. No, I can't tell her. I don't want her to lose respect for me. So, what did you want to talk to me about? I ask. Ramirez levels his gaze at me. His eyes are just as dark and serious as my husband's can be.
It's about Suzette Lowell. There's something I need to tell you about her, and you can't tell another soul.
Okay?
I mean it, Millie. I'll lose my job.
Now my interest is piqued. I won't tell anyone. You have my word.
They checked out that room below the stairs,
he says.
And guess what they found?
If he says there was a child's skeleton in there, I'm not sure I want to know.
Millie, they found Suzette Lowell's fingerprints.
It takes me several moments to process what he's saying to me. If Suzette's fingerprints were in that room, she knew about the room. She knew everything about that room. That's why she didn't want Nico at her house. It wasn't because she was worried about him breaking something or making a mess. She didn't want him over because she knew that her husband was a pervert. And she let him come over anyway. How dare she? What if Jonathan hurt Nico or Ada? What if... I'll kill her, I gasp.
What's about to happen to her,
he says,
is going to be far worse than that. They found something else in that room.
And then he tells me something so horrifying, I want to throw up all over the upholstery of this car.
She's staying at a hotel,
he tells me.
The police are planning to bring her in for questioning. I wanted to tell you first.
My head is spinning with the revelations Ramirez has dropped on me. Suzette knew. She knew. And now she's going to be charged as an accomplice to the terrible things her husband did. If that's not justice, I don't know what is. Except, it won't change the fact that Ada is the one who killed Jonathan. It won't change the fact that Enzo refuses to turn our daughter in and will spend the rest of his life in prison to protect her. And then it hits me. There might be a way to fix this. Benny, I say urgently, do we have time to talk to Suzette before the police pick her up? His thick eyebrows shoot up.
You're joking, right?
I need to talk to her.
I can't bring you with me on police business. I'll get fired.
Fine. I tap my fingers on the knee of my blue jeans. Then drive me to the hotel and let me talk to her myself.
No way. I'm not leaving you alone with that woman. The kids don't need their mother locked up for murder, too.
Please, I say. You owe me one, Benny.
Actually, I owe you at least 10.
He scratches the stubble on his jaw.
What do you want to talk to her about, anyway?
I nod at the steering wheel. I'll explain everything to you on the way over. 78. Ramirez drives us to a swanky hotel on the outskirts of town. It looks like the sort of hotel that has a spa in every room and linen that gets replaced every hour on the hour. In other words, it's a hotel that I could never afford in my wildest dreams. A valet takes his keys to park the car, and we walk together into the hotel and up to the concierge desk. Ramirez reaches into his pocket and pulls out his badge, sliding it across the table.
My name is Detective Ramirez of the NYPD. I'm looking for a guest of the hotel named Suzette Lowell.
The concierge picks up the phone and calls Suzette's room. When he reports that a member of the NYPD is here to see her, we are immediately granted access to the room. Up to the 10th floor and all the way down the hallway, the concierge tells us. I walk purposefully in the direction of the elevator, and Ramirez hurries to keep pace with me. The elevator walls are entirely mirrors, which makes me feel a little sick to my stomach. Or maybe I'm sick to my stomach because I'm visiting the wife of a man who threatened both my children, and she just let it happen. God knows what he would have done to Nico if Ada hadn't intervened.
I don't know about all this, Millie,
Ramirez says.
I'd rather do this by the book when she's at the station.
Please give me a chance to talk to her, I say to him. This is our best shot at getting my family off the hook. We have to try. He just shakes his head. The elevator dings as we reach the 10th floor. I dismount the elevator and stride in the direction of Suzette's room. Ramirez has to jog to keep up with me. I don't stop until I have reached her door. I lift my fist to knock while Ramirez sighs and shakes his head. Just a moment, a voice calls out from behind the door. A second later, the door to the hotel swings open. Suzette is standing there, wearing a white fleece bathrobe with the name of the hotel printed on the lapel. She had managed a pleasant smile on her painted lips, but that vanishes when she sees me standing at the open doorway. What are you doing here? Suzette hisses.
Mrs. Akadi is with me, Mrs. Lowell, Ramirez says.
She looks between the two of us, and for a moment, I'm certain she's going to slam the door in our faces. And that would be her right. Are you really with the NYPD? She asks him.
I assure you, I am, he says. And if you'll allow me and Mrs. Accardi to come inside, I'd like to make you an offer that can save us all a great deal of grief moving forward.
She puts her hand on her hip. Show me your ID. Ramirez obligingly reaches into his pocket again to pull out his badge. He shows it to her, and she takes a moment to examine it, as if she could possibly tell the difference between a fake ID and a real one. But if that makes her feel better, she can knock herself out. Fine, she says stiffly. You can come in for a minute, but I was about to take a shower.
I bet they have nice showers here,
Ramirez says as he strolls into her hotel room. Suzette has a chance to slam the door in my face, but she doesn't take it, and I manage to slip inside with him.
Not as nice as the ones in your house, though.
Thank you, Suzette says stiffly. I can't go in there right now, for obvious reasons.
Oh, I know,
He stops when he gets to the giant king-sized bed.
You want to take a seat, Mrs. Lowell?
I don't think we need to get too comfortable. One side of his lips quirks up.
Fair enough.
So, what did you want to talk to me about, Detective?
Well, actually,
he says,
it's about your house. The police were in there, you know.
She rolls her eyes.
That's how it works with a crime scene, I assume. And they saw every part of it.
Her eyes narrow, and I detect a tiny flicker of fear. What is that supposed to mean?
I mean,
Ramirez says,
they saw the room below your stairwell.
If I hadn't been staring at Suzette's face, I would have missed the way she blanched. I swear to God, if Ramirez weren't standing next to me right now, I would scratch that woman's eyes out. I would rip her heart right out of her chest. I don't know what you're talking about, Suzette sputters.
No?
Ramirez arches one of his dark eyebrows.
So, you didn't know there was a room below the staircase on the first floor of your house, concealed behind a bookcase?
She shakes her head slowly. I think I saw some sort of storage room when we first moved in, but we never ended up using it.
That's so strange,
he muses.
Not really, she says. Jonathan already owned the house when I moved in, so I never went through the floor plans.
Even though you're a real estate agent, you never looked at the floor plans of your own house?
She shrugs.
We already owned it and weren't considering selling. Why should I have?
Is that a crime, detective?
Here's the thing, though. Ramirez levels his eyes at her.
Your fingerprints are all over that room. So, if you didn't know about it, how did that happen exactly?
When he first came in, she had declined the offer to sit. But now, she sinks onto the mattress, her face ashen. It's gratifying to see how terrified she looks. She deserves it.
You know what else the police found in that room?
Ramirez asks her. She can only mutely shake her head.
We found blood and DNA belonging to a kid named Braden Lundy,
he says.
A kid who disappeared 3 years ago. The police are digging up your backyard as we speak. Any idea what they're going to find?
Suzette seems to be having trouble breathing. She looks like she is at a complete loss for words, much as I was when Ramirez told me that piece of information when we were in his car. Unfortunately for her, I am no longer at a loss for words. You're the accessory to the murder of a little boy, Suzette, I hiss at her. You're going to jail for the rest of your life. And you deserve it. A lump forms in my throat. You knew that your husband murdered a child, and you didn't tell a soul. You let your husband walk free. You still let my kid into your home. How could you? What is wrong with you? Suzette buries her face in her hands for a moment. She still hasn't said a word.
Mrs. Lowell?
Ramirez says. When Suzette lifts her face from her hands, her cheeks are streaked with tears.
I didn't know about Braden until after. I swear. If I had known.
But you did know,
Ramirez says in a low growl.
You knew what he did, and you didn't call the police. You didn't tell anyone.
What would have been the point? It was too late.
I'm sick to my stomach. Janice mentioned that kid who went missing years ago, but I thought she was being dramatic, especially after Suzette claimed the boy had been found. It turns out Janice was the one who had it right. The fact that Suzette said it's too late means there will not be a happy ending for that family.
I hated him too, you know.
She wipes the tears from her eyes with the back of her hand.
I couldn't even stand to be in the same house with that man.
But I stayed with him to keep an eye on him and make sure he didn't do anything, you know, like that ever again. I kept any other children from getting hurt.
I glare at her. Wow, you're a saint.
Millie, she murmurs. If I called the police, do you know what they would have done to my life? I would have been the wife of a child murderer. Do you know what that would have been like?
I shake my head. You're despicable, Suzette. At least she has the good grace to hang her head.
Detective Ramirez came here to bring you to the police station, I say. But I talked him out of it. Instead, we're going to give you another choice.
Suzette looks up at me in surprise. I glance at Ramirez, who nods at me, and then I continue.
You need to confess to your husband's murder. Say you killed him because you found out what he was doing in that room, and that's why your fingerprints are all over the room. You can call it self-defense.
You want me to lie? She gasps.
You got another choice,
Ramirez speaks up.
Second choice, you let Enzo Accardi go down for a murder he didn't do, and then we prosecute you for conspiring to kill that little kid. And believe me, we will go after you hard.
Suzette stares at us, shaking her head.
But I didn't kill Jonathan.
But if you did, nobody would blame you, right? You get a good lawyer, which you can afford, and you might not go to jail at all. But if they nail you for that kid, or even if people think you were involved, which we both know they will.
She sucks in a breath. We have given her two terrible options. For a split second, I almost feel sorry for her. Then I remember what she did.
What about the blood on Enzo's knife? She asks. The police told me about that.
Enzo left his knife behind in your house,
Ramirez shrugs.
You used it to kill your husband, then tried to get rid of the evidence by returning it to him.
Suzette drops her eyes, looking down at the palms of her hands. No matter what she decides, her entire life is about to change forever.
Can I think about it?
She asks in a small voice. Ramirez looks at his watch.
You can think about it, but I'm telling you now that Detective Willard is on his way. He'll be here any minute.
She takes a ragged breath.
Would you mind leaving my room so I can get dressed?
Ramirez agrees to leave the room. We've got to get out of here before Detective Willard catches us and discovers what we've been up to. As the door slams shut behind us, I stare daggers into the door to the hotel room. I never liked Suzette Lowell, but I had no idea about the depths of her depravity. I had no idea that she would cover up such horrible crimes just for the sake of her own reputation. When I look over at Ramirez, I can tell he's thinking the same thing.
"Only for you and Enzo, Millie,"
he says.
"I'll pull every string I've got to make this come together and get him off the hook."
"So we're even then," I say.
"No, I think I still owe you a few more."
I bring my ear close to the door to the hotel room, listening for sounds coming from within. What if she tries to kill herself in there?
"She won't do that. She's a fighter. You can just tell."
"What do you think she'll decide?" He smiles sadly.
"She's going to confess to killing her husband. I'm sure of it. She doesn't want that other charge. And she knows they have her."
I hope he's right. I need my husband back. And I need this nightmare to be over. Although, I have a feeling it's not going to be over for a very long time. 79. It's been almost 2 weeks since Suzette Lowell confessed to the murder of her husband, Jonathan Lowell. The four of us are having breakfast in our kitchen, something that didn't seem like it would ever be possible again only 2 weeks earlier. But now, Enzo is home again. After Suzette confessed, all of the charges against him were dropped. Ada's part in the murder is only known to us.
"I love chocolate chip pancakes," Nico says as he happily digs into the plate of pancakes I made.
Enzo flashes me a smile from across the table. He still looks tired from the events of the last few weeks, but he's here, and that's what's important. And our family is healing. Nico is especially going to need a lot of therapy after everything that happened. But that's okay. We are going to bounce back from this. We are not going to let what the Lowells did destroy us.
"One more week of school," Enzo reminds the kids. "Then you get summer vacation.
We take trip somewhere, yes?"
"Where?" Ada asks. "Yes, where?" I ask, because this is the first time I'm hearing about this alleged trip.
"We will decide," he says. "I think we need to get away."
He's right. We do need to get away. This summer, we are selling this house. After everything that happened, I can't imagine living here anymore. We need to find a place that is cheaper so we are not stressing over every single bill. Maybe we need to relocate somewhere entirely different. A fresh start would be nice.
"I want to go to Disneyland," Nico pipes up.
"Me too,"
Ada says. "Florida is very hot in the summer," I remind them.
"That's Disney World, Mom," Ada corrects me. "Disneyland is in California."
California? Is she serious? I was thinking more along the lines of a trip to the Jersey Shore. I look over at Enzo, who shrugs. "I don't think we're going to California this summer. 4 round-trip tickets across the country isn't in our budget. But I don't have the heart to shut down their Disneyland dreams right now." The school bus is coming soon, so we usher both the kids out the door for them to make the bus with seconds to spare. Just as the bus drives away, that black Dodge Charger pulls up into our cul-de-sac. While I'm always happy to see my friend, I can't say I don't get a flash of anxiety when I see a police officer parking in front of my lawn. But Enzo doesn't seem the slightest bit concerned. He waves at Ramirez as he gets out of his car.
Buongiorno, Benny.
Ramirez waves back. Then he sees my face and quickly says,
This is just a social visit, Millie. Everything is fine.
Thank God. Would you like to come in? I ask him.
Can't,
he says.
Busy morning, but I just wanted to check in on the two of you while I was in the neighborhood. Everything going okay?
We are good, Enzo says.
Thank you for everything. And the kids?
Ramirez asks.
They are handling everything okay?
Yes, I reply, but with hesitation.
Millie is worried about Ada.
Enzo speaks up. He's right. I hate to admit it, but I have become obsessed with what my daughter did. I've recognized that Jonathan Lowell was a horrible person, and he deserved to die. But I just keep seeing him lying on the floor with his throat gaping open. My daughter did that.
Ada will be fine,
Ramirez assures me.
Look, she did what she had to do, Millie. You can understand that, can't you?
I guess so. It was my fault, Enzo says. I gave her the knife. My dad gave it to me at the same age, and I thought this is no problem. I just want her to be safe. But we live in a different world now. I can't blame Enzo, though. The knife is what saved her life. If she hadn't been carrying that pocket knife, God knows what would have happened to her. I am just troubled by what she did with it. We've still never spoken about how she slit Jonathan's throat.
Anyway, Enzo says, if you are too busy to come in for coffee now, come by for dinner tonight, yes?
Actually,
Ramirez tugs on his tie,
I got a date tonight.
For a moment, I am pulled from my worries about Ada, and a smile spreads across my lips. A date? Really? Ramirez returns a smile that is an endearing combination of excited and nervous.
Believe it or not, Cecilia set me up with her mother. This is only our second date, but we've been talking a lot on the phone, and I know it's early, but I like that woman a lot. She's really something.
I almost burst out laughing at what is most certainly the understatement of the century. She really is, I agree.
Maybe you retire now,
Enzo teases him.
Never,
Ramirez says. But if anybody could convince that man to finally retire, it would be Nina Winchester.
Anyway,
he says,
I gotta head out, but anything you need, give me a yell.
Ramirez gets back in his car, and we watch him drive away. I've got to get to work as well, but lately, it's been hard to focus. I'm happy that my husband has been released from jail, but I feel consumed by my worries about my children, especially Ada.
Millie, Enzo says, you need to let go of your worries. He adds, it's bad for your blood pressure.
My blood pressure is fine now, thank you very much. It actually is. I've been checking it every day, and for the last week, the numbers have been perfect.
So, we keep it that way.
He kisses me on the cheek.
Ada will be fine. Her mama was fine, and she will be fine.
He's right. I just have to keep telling myself that. Ada did not do anything wrong. She is a hero, as far as I'm concerned. But I am her mother. It is my job to worry. So I will keep watching her and worrying.
80. Ada. Library period is halfway over. I'm sitting at one of the tables by the windows, reading this great book called Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier. It's old, but it's so haunting. When I read it, I get chills. There's only a week left of school, and I hope I can finish it in time. But if I can't, it's because of that kid Hunter. He laid off me for a little while, but today he is back with a vengeance. He sits down across from me at the beginning of the period, and the first thing he says to me is, "Will you go out with me on Friday night, Ada?" "No, thank you," I reply stiffly. "What about Saturday night?" "No." "Sunday? Monday?" I stick my nose back in my book. I'm just going to ignore him. That's what you're supposed to do with kids like him. If you don't give them any attention, they go away. At least, that's what Mom says. "Ada," he says in a sing-song voice. "Has anyone ever written a song about you?" I don't look up. I don't respond. "I'm going to write a song about you right now," he says. And then he starts singing. "Ada, I went and I got her a potato. Then she went with me on a date." The librarian hears Hunter singing, and she gives the two of us a sharp look. "Ada, Hunter, please quiet down." If the librarian thinks we are fooling around, she will take away our books and make us sit in the corner. I really want to finish this book. "Please stop," I say. "You're going to get us in trouble. I just want to read my book." "No, you don't," he says, too loudly. "You're just pretending to like the book and being hard to get. That's what my dad told me." "Your dad is wrong." "My dad is never wrong. And at least he didn't go to jail for killing someone." It makes me angry that he said that. Dad didn't kill Mr. Lowell. And after he came home, he told me if he knew what Mr. Lowell was doing to Nico, he would have done the exact same thing I did. The police still have Dad's pocket knife, the one I used to stab Mr. Lowell. I wish I still had it. I'll probably never get it back, which is sad, because I loved that knife. Then again, I don't need a pocket knife. I put down my copy of Rebecca. I get out of my seat and then take the one next to Hunter. He didn't expect this, and his eyebrows shoot up. "Hunter," I say, "I need you to know something." He grins at me. "Yes? Are you finally coming around?" "No." I look him straight in the eyes, holding his gaze. "If you don't leave me alone right now, then tonight I am going to sneak into your bedroom while you're sleeping." I wait a beat, watching his reaction. "And then, when you wake up in the morning, you are going to pull back the blankets and you will find your bloody balls lying on the sheets next to you." He laughs.
"What?"
"You heard me. If you bother me or any other girls ever again, I will castrate you in your sleep." Castrate is a word I learned recently from a book I was reading. I think I'm using it correctly here. It means to cut off somebody's testicles. I like the way all of the color drains out of his face. I watch him trying to recover.
You couldn't do that,"
he stutters. "Maybe not," I say. But actually, I think I could. Would you like to find out? From the look on his face, I don't think he would like to find out. He jumps out of his seat, backing away from me.
You're a psychopath,
he says. I just shrug and smile at him. He stumbles away from the table, practically tripping over his own feet in his eagerness to get away from me. I don't think he's going to be bothering me again. I'd like to think he isn't going to be bothering any other girls again. I pick up my book to continue reading, but before I do, I glance out the window next to me. It's gloomy enough outside that I can almost see my reflection in the glass. It's funny, because I always thought I was practically identical to my dad with my dark hair and eyes. But now that I'm looking at myself in that blurry window, I realize as I've gotten older, my facial features have become a lot more similar to my mom's. I never noticed it until this very moment. I look just like her. How funny.
Epilogue. Martha.
I am staying at a motel far away from Long Island. Jed hasn't come looking for me since I left, so I'm starting to finally feel safe. He told me that if I ever tried to leave him, he would hunt me down and rip off my scalp. But he hasn't found me yet. I have that gun Enzo gave me, though, in case he does show up. It makes me feel secure. I worry about money, though. Jed took all of my paychecks, so all I've got left is what I managed to stash away, plus a small amount Enzo was able to give me. I can try to work under the table, although it's hard to find jobs like that in a new place without word-of-mouth referrals. It will take time, but I'm a hard worker and willing to prove myself. I've been waiting a long time for my freedom from that monster. And I knew that when the Accardis moved in next door, it would be my ticket out. Many years ago, back when I was young and full of hope about my life, I worked for a wealthy family. They had a teenage son who was the sort of boy who believed anything he wanted should be his. I disliked him intensely, especially after I saw a girl dashing out of his bedroom in tears. He laughed about it later, when I was changing the sheets on his bed that were spotted with her blood. 3 months after that, he was dead. The first time I heard about Wilhelmina Calloway, the girl who would become Millie Accardi, was when she was being charged with the murder of the son of my employers. I had no doubt that he deserved the justice Millie doled out, but the jury didn't see it that way. She went to prison for his murder. I recognized Millie when she came to look at the house at 14 Locust Street with her handsome husband. She was much older, of course, and yet I knew her instantly. There was something about her that was hard to forget. Something in her eyes. A quick internet search proved she was who I thought she was. At that moment, I knew Millie would be the only one who could help me escape from Jed. I just needed her to move into that house. But the houses in this neighborhood always went for ridiculous amounts of money. It was clear the Accardis wouldn't be able to afford a bidding war. So I helped them. I made conversation with prospective buyers, mentioning the leaky roof or the mold in the attic. One by one, they dropped out, and the Accardis bought the house for a bargain. just as I had hoped they would. I wanted so badly to tell Millie everything the moment she moved in. I was always looking out the window, watching her house, waiting for a time when I could get her alone and spill my guts. I was sure she would help me. But when I started working for her, I could never find the right time. I froze whenever I tried. After all that, it wasn't Millie who ended up helping me. It was her husband, Enzo. He was so kind to me. He offered me more than he could afford, and he wouldn't allow me to say no. Even so, I feared my stash of money wouldn't be enough once I was on the run, which is why, right before I left the hotel where I was staying and started on the next leg of my journey, I went to Suzette Lowell's house one last time. I parked in the back so that nosy neighbor of hers wouldn't tell Suzette that I had been there. She had a ton of jewelry and other stuff I could hawk. I feel guilty saying that. I'm not a thief. I have always lived my life with honesty and integrity. My husband has turned me into this. I hope I never see him again. I planned to spend 15 minutes going through Suzette's jewelry. I knew which pieces she wore a lot and which ones she would never miss. She has so much jewelry, and all of it is so expensive. 3 or 4 pieces would have been enough to tide me over. But as it turned out, when I went to the Lowell's house, Mr. Lowell was already home. I hadn't expected him to be there during the day, so it surprised me when I descended the stairs after taking 3 of Suzette's necklaces and found him standing in the living room, breathing hard as he leaned against a bookcase positioned against the wall by the stairway, like he was trying to shift it with his body weight. He grunted loudly, then hunched over as he gripped his belly. I wondered why he was trying to move that bookcase. It was clear that he hurt himself doing it, because when he took a step, he winced.
"Where is she?"
he mumbled under his breath.
"Where'd that little bitch go?"
Before I could figure out what on earth he was talking about, he raised his eyes, and that's when he saw me. He knew I was not scheduled to be here today, and immediately his face clouded with suspicion.
"You," he growled, "what are you doing here?"
I'm cleaning," I stammered, even though I clearly had no cleaning supplies with me. It might not have been so bad if I hadn't been holding those necklaces in my left hand. Everything would have been different if I had brought my purse into the house and could have stashed those necklaces out of sight.
"You've been stealing from us," he cried. "I knew it. I told Suzette that's where her jewelry was going. I told her she should fire you."
"No," I said frantically. "I didn't." But Mr. Lowell was furious. He kept raving and ranting about how I was a dirty thief. He said all these terrible things about how he was going to call the police now, and they were going to take me to jail. The whole time, he was clutching his stomach. But all I could think about was what Jed would do to me if I got arrested for stealing. He would probably kill me with his bare hands. I don't know at what point I noticed the letter opener lying on the coffee table next to us.
It all happened so fast, honestly. I grabbed it, and really, I just wanted him to stop talking. I just wanted him to stop saying that he was going to call the police. But the next thing I knew, he was lying on the floor, and there was blood gushing from his throat, pooling around his dead body. I had to run. There was certainly no time to clean it up, especially when I heard Millie knocking on the door. When I went out the back door, Enzo was in the yard next door. I was afraid he would see me, but it looked like he had just cut his hand pretty badly on something, and he was trying to stop the bleeding with his shirt. He was distracted. He didn't see me dash back into the clearing to where I parked my car. Later, I saw in the news that Enzo had been arrested. I felt terrible about that, especially after everything he did for me. Money was tight for him, but he still helped me out. He is such a good man, and he didn't deserve to go to prison for what I did. I was seconds away from calling the police to tell them that I was the one who killed Jonathan Lowell. But before I could do it, a story came on the news that shocked me. Suzette confessed to killing her husband. I didn't quite understand it, but I didn't feel nearly as bad about Suzette Lowell being sent to prison. She's really quite a horrible person. For the last 2 weeks, I have been certain the truth would be discovered. I have been certain that the police would come knocking on my motel door, ready with an arrest warrant for the murder of Jonathan Lowell. But it hasn't happened. They haven't arrested me. They haven't even questioned me. I suppose nobody ever suspects the housemaid.
Were you completely shocked by who Martha really is and by the housemaid's ultimate revenge? Did the twists and turns of Millie and Enzo's last adventure have you gripped? Be sure to sign up at www.bookature.com/Frieda-McFadden for news on more Frieda McFadden and Bookature releases. This has been The Housemaid is Watching, written by Frieda McFadden, narrated by Lauren Ullman and Ina Marie Smith. Copyright 2024. By Frieda McFadden. Production copyright 2024 by Bookature, an imprint of Storyfire Limited. The moral right of the author has been asserted.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.